Good afternoon, everyone. What an amazing body we live in. And it's been designed to heal itself. Isn't that the most amazing thought? Yesterday, I touched on a couple of things. I touched on the DNA. I also touched on the role of microbes in disease. And I'd like to explore that a little bit more in my first section today, before I go into another section, which is, I think, on the tip of everyone's lips today, which is diabetes. And you will see that diabetes is a lifestyle disease, and what you learn today, if you implement, you will never get diabetes. Now, that's pretty strong words, is that right? Never? And if you implement what I am going to share with you today, and you have diabetes, you will conquer your diabetes. Ah, yes, but Sister Barbara, are you talking about type 1 or type 2? Do you know what my answer to that is? It's one word. It's called yes. The human body's been designed to heal itself, and it will heal itself. What's that little two-letter word? If you give it the right condition. And in 1 Corinthians, I think we know it well, Chapter 3, verse 16 and 70s, it says, "Know you not that ye are the temple of God, and the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy." Now, that's pretty strong words. And then the next bit tells you why. Because the temple of God is holy. Which temple ye are? I'd like to suggest that God doesn't have to destroy, because we destroy ourselves. But many people destroy themselves in ignorance, because there is a roaring lion walking about, seeing whom he can devour. And who does he target? That man said me. Not the non-Christians. In fact, not even the Christians. Who? Those that keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. In fact, in Revelation chapter 12, it says he went to make war. War. The remnant of his seed. And on Friday, I'm going to go into the part of the brain where the war takes place. And now I'm going to show you exactly what the war is, because we need to know that. So on Friday, we're going to headquarters, capital city of the human body. In page 346 of Christ Objects Lesson, there is quite an amazing paragraph. And I have to tell you, that's where it is, because these are not my words. Transgression of physical law is transgression of the moral law. Whoa! Because God is as truly the author of the physical law as he is of the moral law. He has written his law with his own finger on every nerve, every muscle, every faculty with which we have been entrusted. And every misuse of any part of our organism is a violation of that law. Whoa. Mercy. All should become intelligent as to the human frame. How many? All. All should become intelligent as to the human frame and how to keep it in the condition necessary to do the work of the Lord. Why do you got to keep it in the condition for to do the work of the Lord? God's work is suffering because the saints are sick. And they're sick majority of the time through ignorance. Because we're not drinking and we're not smoking and we're not partying and we're not taking heroin and we're... So why are we sick? It's through ignorance. Huh? Hopefully, anyway. I gave my heart to God, and I have to tell you, I was still having marijuana for a few months. I found that one hard to give up, but by the grace of God and by the power of His Holy Spirit, I was able to do that. I used to go to nursing mother meetings and tell them they all should be on marijuana. That was me. That was me at the age of 25. I thought, well, it's better than alcohol. At least it doesn't give you liver cancer. I'll tell you what, I was ignorant, wasn't I? I'm not ignorant anymore. And you know, in Acts 17, verse 30, God says that he winks at our ignorance Sorry, after these meetings, you're not ignorant anymore. It is my aim to help you become intelligent as to your human frame and how to keep it in the conditions necessary to do the work of the Lord. The way the physical organism affects the mental is one of the most important branches of education, and I'd like to suggest the most neglected. The physical organism should be carefully preserved and developed. Did you catch those two words? Carefully preserved and, sorry, preservation isn't enough. It's not enough just that your eyes work, you've got to develop them. It's not enough that the body works, you've got to develop it. It's not enough that you got a mind. What do you got to do? Develop it. Okay? Can you all play a musical instrument? It's time. You're probably better than me with language. Oh, how I love listening to that French. If you used to know French and you don't know it too well, it's time to start developing that again. The human organism should be carefully preserved and developed, that through humanity, the divine nature might be revealed in all of its fullness. Did you catch that? That is such an amazing sentence. Let me give it to you again. Page 347 of the Christ Objects lesson. The physical organism, by the way, this is whether you're 9 or 90, got that? Because did you know that muscle knows no age? Whether you're 9 or you're 90, you can be running up hills. The physical organism needs to be carefully preserved and developed that through humanity, the divine nature might be revealed in all of its fullness. Hutu. Well, do you know what it says in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1? It says, "Wherefore, seeing we are compassed about with so great a crowd of witnesses," who are the witnesses? They're the people in our homes. What does it say if you can be a Christian in your home? I tell you, they see you as you are. Is that right? The ones in your home are your extended family, your in-laws, your neighbors, your church family, the people you work with, the people you see once a year. Now let's go further. Let's go outside the planet. All the worlds are watching, because what does the accuser of our brethren say? They'll never do it. Isn't that what he said? Isn't that what he said of Job? Take everything away and he'll curse you. Has he taken everything away from you? Did you curse him? When I left my mountain home with my 6 children in the back, I left everything. Everything. Very hard. Very hard. 6 children. I'm driving out of my mountain home. The only way I got out was because my husband thought I was coming back. Lost everything. Nothing. Got nothing. Yea, doubtless I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Jesus Christ my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and do count them but dung. What's dung? That's what those horses drop in the paddock. Is that right? I don't see any of us running and catching that and seeing it as valuable. Unless you've got a rose garden, of course. That's in Philippians. And do count them but dung that I may win Christ. Mm-hmm. So the witnesses, it's the other worlds out there. Do you know what our role is? To prove that it can be done, not in my strength. Not in my strength, but in the power of God. So there are witnesses. Seeing then we are accompanied about with so great a cloud of witness. Ah, there are some other witnesses. Well, how further can you go? We can go somewhere else. We can go inside. 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 Down to the tiniest little, well, we're all got made of tiny little cells, 100 trillion cells. Do you know they are all witnesses? They're all witnesses of how much we're drinking. You ask a massage therapist when she's massaging those muscles, she can tell She can tell the people that drink water by the way the skin moves, by the way the muscles move. She can tell what you're drinking. She can tell what you're eating. Because our eyes, our hair, our skin, they're all an illustration of how hydrated we are, of what we're eating, of exercise, of how well we're sleeping at night. Interesting. That rings a bell. Page 127 of the Ministry of Healing. Have you looked up that page yet? The eight laws of health, these are the true remedies. Seeing then that we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, wow, out and in, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and run with patience the race set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross and despised the shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the Father. What's the joy set before him? Have you read in Desire of Ages what helped him on that cross? It was the joy. What was the joy? It was you. You on the sea of glass. Now before that. Before that. Where? Here. Here. Living a victorious life. That's the joy set before him. That accuser of the brethren will say to you, you cannot do it. He's the accuser of the brethren. When that finger points at you, that accuser of the brethren, don't listen to him. Don't listen to him. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the Father. Wherefore consider him. What are we told? For 1 hour a day, contemplate the closing scenes. The closing scenes. Because we probably all would have fallen asleep in that garden. Have you thought of that? The closing scenes where he just pushed on. He just pushed on. He just pushed on. For the joy set before him. Endured the cross, despising the shame. And he's now set down at the right hand of the Father. He's won the victory already. He's already won the victory. Are you on the victorious side? He is able. He is able to keep you from falling and to present you faultless. Whoa. The Bible's true. Otherwise, we'd hardly believe that. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the Father. Wherefore consider him, who endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be weary and faint in your mind, because we often feel like that. Is that right? Just one glance at the cross. Do you know what it said in Ministry of Healing? Paul said, if ever he was discouraged, one glance at the cross. You think you got it tough? Glance at the cross. Just before Isaiah 53, in the last few verses of Isaiah 52, it said his visage was marred more than any man. Do you know what that means? He did not even look like a human being. Not one word did he utter. Wherefore consider him who endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be weary and faint in your mind, for ye have not yet resisted under blood, striving against sin. We're in a battle. What do we read? This is not a parade ground, this is a battle. You've got to put that armor on, and we're going to go through the armor in more detail. So what I'd like to look at how we can know what are the right conditions for this body, that we can prevent ever defiling the temple of God. Because there's a cross in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19, it goes a little bit clearer and says, what? In other words, exclamation mark? Shock, horror? No, you're not, that your body is the temple. Your body is the temple. So let's look after this body. Remember what the first verse said? For the temple of God is holy. Ooh, which temple you are. And I like the preacher Lehman where he said, our body was designed for one purpose, and that was the indwelling of the Spirit of God. Isn't that the amazing mystery? Christ in you, the hope of glory. It's our only hope of glory. In Proverbs 14, verse 6, the Bible says, a scorner seeketh wisdom and findeth it not, but knowledge is easy to him that understands. It is my aim to give you an understanding. So what I'd like to do, I was unable to finish yesterday, the role of microorganisms in disease. Now I have written a whole book on this. It's called Self-Healed by Design, the role of microorganisms in disease. And two boxes were supposed to arrive today and a box of DVDs. And we're hoping that the Spirit of God has his hand over those books and they'll all arrive tomorrow. And they'll be in the ABC bookshop. Because there's so much misunderstanding about this. It was Louis Pasteur that first put the germ theory forward. And Florence Nightingale, I touched on her yesterday, when she read of Louis Pasteur's theory, she said, this is the theory of a man of a very unstable mind. And anyone who believes it is equally unstable because germs don't cause the disease, they are the result. They are the result of unhealthful conditions. Remember Florence Nightingale went into that putrid hospital where the young men were dying at 50%. The death rate was 50%. She cleaned it up. The sanitary commission came over and they got rid of the dead horse and the dead dog that were in the water that they were drinking and washing the wounds with. I think it's a miracle that it wasn't 80% that were dying. Florence said she found a young man one day in a corner, still had his battle clothes on, 2 weeks after he'd been admitted. They'd forgotten about this one. Ugh. That's the woman she knew. She had her hands on in that place. She knew the true cause of disease. All she did was turn the tap off so there was nothing for the bacteria to eat. God made them. They're opportunist organisms. You have a look in the Time magazine with the Ebola outbreak. Look in the background. Filth. Filth. I was reading an article on TB in Time magazine. It said there are some cases of TB in Africa that are now drug resistant. I read the article and the journalist followed the health worker into a little village. And as the health worker's going into the village, there are goats there that are pulling rubbish all over the path. Note, they get further and further into the village where the hut is with the man with drug-resistant TB. And across the way there's a tin shack with bright red writing, Coca-Cola. And it's selling sugar biscuits. She goes a little bit further, and here's the hut. She pushes the dirty rag aside. That's the door. And the stench nearly knocks her over. And there's the man inside, lying on the dirt floor with the drug-resistant TB. I thought, does anyone else see this? The money that's spent on that medication, if it was spent on putting clean water in the village, if it was spent on showing them cleanliness. This is what Florence Nightingale did. She had revolutionary effect. And remember what she did? She increased hygiene, sanitation, and nutrition. She knew that these pathogenic microbes, your bacteria, yeast, and fungus, they're just there to clean up the mess. Clean it up and they won't be there. In 1929, Alexander Fleming, this is about 80 years later. And I love Florence's story. She got that 50% death rate in that hospital down to 2%. 80 years before antibiotics were discovered. That's why I like her story. 1929, Alexander Fleming, he's growing bacteria in his flasks in his laboratory. He comes in one morning and the bacteria's dead. And he knew Newton's third law of motion. To every action, there's an equal and an opposite reaction. Why had his bacteria died? Remember, we should all be private investigators. Job 29:16 says, the cause I knew not, I searched out. There's always a cause. Looking around the laboratory, can't see anything that may have caused it. Looked out this open window, the sun was streaming in, and on those streams of sunlight was a heavy dust. And he watched it, and it came in, and it settled on his bacteria. So he looked further, and on the next story there was an open window, and in the open window there was a plate of fruit, and in the plate of fruit there was a moldy orange. And the dust from the old moldy orange came down, settled on his bacteria, and killed it. Now, he called that mold, he called it penicillium. Why did the mold kill his bacteria? Well, you see, mold, it gives off a dust, and in the dust is its spore, but in its dust is a highly toxic gas, designed to kill off anything that would compete with the mold's food source. It's almost as if the mold says, this is my orange, no one else is going to get it, I'm going to kill off anything that might come and get my orange, what might try and get his orange, other yeast, molds, funguses. Do you see that? He called the mold waste, which is more toxic than the mold, he called that penicillic acid. And that's the penicillin that we know today. Penicillin has saved the lives of probably millions now. Penicillin. Granted, but we've got another problem today. The overuse of the antibiotics and the inability of the physician to ask, why are the bacteria there? When I was nursing, we didn't live a very good life, I'm sorry. I became a Christian at 25. So I'm a nurse and I'm 19. We used to party a lot and have too many things that we shouldn't have had. And so I would get bronchitis. And I'd start coughing up yellow lumps. And I would immediately think, I've got an infection. I'll go to the doctor, and what did he give me? Antibiotics. That's what I was brought up with. That's the germ theory. A germ has got into my lungs and made me sick. I need to take this drug to kill the germ. Is that right? But do you know what Florence Nightingale said? This is the theory of a man of a very unstable mind. You see, germs don't cause the disease. They're the result. They're the result of unhealthful conditions. You look at Florence Nightingale said she saw typhoid grow in a hut. No one took the typhoid in, but the conditions in the hut were what? Putrid. Look at what the word antibiotic means. It means against life. Now, if we're living organisms, we have to get away from this kill mentality. Because anything that has the ability to kill a small organism has the potential to kill a large. I'm not against antibiotics. They still save lives. But it should be used as a last resort, as a life-saving thing. Not for a sore finger, not for a cough. And this is where natural remedies come in. A lady rang me and she said, Barbara, my first son, he was vaccinated, he was always sick, he used to get chest colds, I'm on antibiotic after antibiotic after antibiotic, he's 5 now and he's not a strong little boy. She said, I got my 10-month-old baby here. She said, he's got a chest cold, he's pulling his ears, green's coming out of his nose. I've been to the doctor. He's got an ear infection, chest. I've got a course of antibiotics here. And I heard that you raised 8 children without antibiotics and they're all still alive. What did you do? Do you know, I scroll through my emails every day and there's many of them and I look for the mother and the baby. I go straight there. They're my priority because I know what it's like. Because you know what happens? There's fear. You don't want your baby to die. So I said to the mother, slice up some garlic, put it in a cloth and wrap it on the baby's feet. Don't put the sliced garlic on the skin of the baby or you'll blister it. Did everyone get that? You need to put a little cloth in between it and then it won't blister. And the biggest pores on the whole of your body are on the soles of your feet. And it takes 1 minute for one drop of blood to go around your whole body. And so within a couple of minutes, you can smell the garlic on the baby's breath. And Psalm 104, verse 14, the Bible says, God gave herbs for the service of man. So the garlic goes in and the body says, over to the chest, please. Up to the ears. We can't understand that. That's the way that God made the body. In fact, medicine or science calls it synergism, the way the herbs work with the needs of the body. You just got to put it in. She had pen and paper there. Yep, yep. What else? I said, make sure the baby sleeps with the window open every night. That baby needs oxygen, fresh air. When I talk on diabetes, I'm going to show you what oxygen does at the cellular level. She said, yep, what else? I said, is the baby eating anything? Not much. I said, well, just to keep the baby on the breast. If the baby has anything to eat, just make it maybe a little bit of orange or apple, just a little fruit. She said, yep, what else? I said, oh, that's it. She said, that's it? I said, yeah, that'll do it. She said, that's all? I said, yeah. Anyway, if the baby's ears were very bad, she could have steamed up an onion, cut it in half and wrapped that on the baby's ears. But the baby's ears weren't that bad and, you know, babies try and pull these things off. But I found with little toddlers, they love being wrapped up. They usually keep it on. She emailed me 3 days later, and the first thing that was said was, wow. She said, my baby recovered quicker than my baby that was put on the antibiotics. You see, the human body will heal itself. You just have to give it the right conditions. Most children with earaches, most children with tonsil problems, it's because of wheat, dairy, and refined sugar. That's the most problems. I live near a town, it's a coastal town called Coffs Harbour. You might have heard of it, it's sort of a bit of a tourist town. And there's a paediatrician there and his name's Dr. Bud, B-U-D-D. And a friend of mine, her grandson was taken to him with eczema. And Dr. Bud said, take the baby off wheat, dairy, refined sugar. And the mother said, my baby's on breast. He said, well, you've got to stop the wheat, dairy, refined sugar. How nice. There are some paediatricians, there are some specialists. I'm afraid the figures show about 1%, but they're there. They're there, working with this amazing body that has the ability to heal itself. Do you know, to date, they've documented and tested 1.5 million different yeasts, moles, and funguses. Of that 1.5 million, 1,000 are known to cause disease in mankind. As I said, they should be just kept for the saving of a life. But by the way, did you know that garlic is 6 times more potent than tetracycline? And tetracycline is quite a common antibiotic. Got to take about 4 raw cloves a day. That's a bit tough. Well, get a bowl of hot soup and crush it into that and it'll just take the edge of it and your stomach can often handle that a little bit better. Remember what our grandparents did? Put their feet in hot water with a spoonful of mustard, take a hot lemon drink, go to bed. Remember all that sort of stuff? 4 times a day. It's as simple as that. 1% of doctors today are claiming that antibiotics are causing more problems than they ever cured. What are they referring to? They're referring to the mold causing the disease. And that is what my book is about, and that's what I touched on yesterday. How can mold and fungus get into the body? There are 4 ways. Through the skin, don't never touch it. If there's a moldy orange in the fruit bowl, get some tongs and don't touch it. Cover your face because you can breathe it in. You can go in through your skin and you can eat it. Don't eat anything that's got any trace of mold on it, and it can be sexually transmitted. But the million-dollar question is, how do you get it out? How do we get this out of the body? Number one, starve. If you don't turn the tap off, you're still going to be mopping up in the corner. What's fungus's favorite food? Sugar. In fact, all types of sugar will feed it. So if someone comes to me wanting help to conquer a yeast presence in their body, my suggestion is just go to the very low glycemic index fruits, like your Granny Smith apple, your grapefruit, maybe even some berries. Yeast, so no yeast bread, so your Marmites, your Terrilla yeast, your Brewer's yeast, you stop all of that. Nutritional yeast flakes, all the yeasty things. And check the house. Check the house. There's no good doing all this stuff if you're still breathing in from mold on the roof or something like that. I think I told you about a man who emailed me, was covered in eczema, even his face is swollen with it. I said, did you have any exposure to mold chemicals? He wrote back and said, a month ago I moved a friend and when we went into the room, everything was covered in mold. He said, the next day it just got out of control. He said, I had to go to the hospital because it's just raw. Had to have cortisone. He said, I'm scared that when I get off the cortisone, it'll all come back. I said, if you do what I say, it won't. I said, the reason why, and they've picked up a bacteria because he's scratching. I said, no more scratching. Well, how do you survive? Freeze it. Block of ice. But that won't heal it, no, but you need a bit of relief. Is that right? And when you scratch it, what's it like 10 minutes later? Worse. The wonders of ice. Our freezers should be full of the stuff. But what if you got 30 bites on you? Well, you'll get there. You'll get there. You'll get there. Number two, kill. You know, praise be to God, there are things that will kill fungus and won't kill you. What a relief. Garlic's a potent one. Olive leaf extract's another one. Grapefruit seed extract is another one. Oregano essential oil. My suggestion is you alternate them. A couple of weeks on that one, couple of weeks on that one, couple of weeks on that one. Number three, balance. Flood the gastrointestinal tract with the good guys. What's that? That's your probiotic. Probiotic means for life. So a good maintenance dose is things like sauerkraut, your sourdough breads or your cultured breads, miso, kefir. You can get some very nice coconut yogurts now. Have you tried coconut yogurt? And four, alkalis. Fungus loves an acid environment. So alkalis. Alkalis, take all the alkaline foods. I've got a lecture on YouTube. Oh, got him. Sorry. Just in case. Alkalis. So your most alkalizing foods, and I have a lecture on YouTube and there's a chapter in my book, so it's your greens, your vegetables, and your most acid-forming foods, probably not a surprise, alcohol, tobacco, teas, coffees, refined sugars, and also the hybridized wheat. I'm going to discuss the wheat when I have finished this part of the lecture, and it will explain it to you, yes? What about decaffeinated coffee? Well, the process to get the caffeine out is a pretty nasty one using chemicals. They do have a water decaf coffee. The thing to do is maybe drink it for a week and stop for a week and have a look. And it'll quickly tell you if there's anything that's happening in there. Is it that simple? Aren't you glad it's simple? I'm so glad it's simple. At Misty Mountain Health Retreat, we've seen people conquer cancer. We've seen people conquer problems that they've had for years. Before I go on to my diabetes lecture, let me give you one story of a man who owned a strawberry farm, and he had prostate cancer, and he was 58, and he came to our health retreat, and you could tell straight away he really wasn't interested in this natural way. But his wife and his daughter were ultra keen. So when I saw what was happening with him and the problems he had, I said, well, there are a few treatments we can give. Are you willing? And he goes, oh, I suppose. And his wife and his daughter were going, yeah, he'll do it, he'll do it. They were really keen. So everything we gave him, oh, all right. And his daughter and his wife were there pushing him on. End of the 2 weeks, I was making a program up for him. Will you do this? Yeah, he'll do it. This is his wife and his daughter. And he was, oh, I suppose so. So he went home and everything was done because he had such a keen wife and daughter. 3 months later, he had a test, cancer-free. Now he's interested. I thought it was a very interesting case because it's as if his wife and daughter enthusiasm were sort of carrying him along. And if it's anything like my husband, if the food's there, you'll eat it. He's not sort of really interested in all that stuff called cooking and all that sort of stuff. And as I say, if it tastes good, they'll eat it. Interesting story. We have many stories. You know, one lady, every time she goes to the doctor, the specialist there, the oncologist there, because they cannot believe it. They cannot believe two tumors have totally gone. And they just keep looking at her. They can't understand what is happening with her. Very interesting. You see, and what is healing? It's the body. It's the body when it's given the right conditions. So very simply, that's how it is. My book is a thorough explanation of this subject. But what I'd like to look at now, I'd like to look at a problem that is, well, I know in Australia, 400 diabetics are being diagnosed every day. And there was no diabetes before sugar was refined. Did you know that? No history of it in Hippocrates' writing. Hippocrates about 400 BC, I think. But something else has come along which is just causing an absolute explosion. So we're going to have a look at causes. And the number one definitely is refined sugar. And I'm going to show you what it does when I show you what wheat does. And the other is the hybridized wheat. So let me give you this hybridized wheat story, and it will help you to understand. In the 1950s, Dr. Norman Boulag and a team of scientists in Mexico were putting the wheat through intensive crossbreeding. They did this because they wanted to produce a plant with a high yield of grain to help with the starvation crisis in India, in Africa, in Mexico. And finally, they came up with a plant that only grew about 2 foot high, had a thick stem because it had to hold the heavy weight of grain. And how the farmers loved it. You see, 1970s, notice the time frame. 1970s, this grain went worldwide, and oh, how the farmers love it. You see, this is 6 times more grain per acre. What's that mean for the farmer? 6 times more dollars per acre? They're going to pay the mortgage. They're going to pay the bills. How they loved it. So can you see that this new grain went like wildfire? It's the hybridized wheat. It's the wheat that we know today. But what was never addressed was the effect of the hybridization of the wheat on the human body. So what the hybridization of the wheat did is it produced a starch called amylopectin A. This is the name of the starch that was produced in the hybridization of this wheat, amylopectin A. Now, amylopectin A gets the blood sugar level up very high, very fast, and so there's always a corresponding dump. Now, let me give you something to compare it with. Amylopectin B is found in bananas and potatoes. And if you know the glycemic index of food, the bananas and the potatoes get the blood sugar level up fairly high, fairly fast. So that would be about like this, not as high, not as fast, not as low, and not as fast. Amylopectin C is found in chickpeas, lima beans, black-eyed beans, all your legumes or your beans. Now that amylopectin C, what that does is that gives a lovely steady rise, and if the board was a bit bigger, I'd go right over here and a steady drop. What does every cell in our body want? What sort of fuel does every cell in our body want? This steady, consistent delivery of fuel. That's what the body wants, especially the brain. Glycemic index of food. The glycemic index of food is a reading or an index of how quickly the glucose in that food is released into the blood. Let me show you. So it's called GI, glycemic index. Baseline is 55. Let me give you something to compare it with. So cherries are 25. And grapefruit, cherries are 26 because it's grapefruit that is 25. So people with diabetes, that's good fruits for them. People conquering a yeast problem, can you see that's good fruit because it doesn't give those rush of sugars. Sugar, whether it be white or whether it be tan or whether it be brown or whether it be black, is 59. Now that's not a surprise. But white bread, white pasta, white cereals, 69. Ah. Do you know what that means? A slice of white bread will get the blood sugar level up quicker and higher. I know in America they call it candy. We call it a lolly. Yeah? What do you call it? Candy or lolly? And how many foods are a combination of those two? There's your cookies, donuts. In Australia, we call a cookie a biscuit. So when I'm in America and it says biscuits and gravy, I'm thinking, cookies and gravy? But I think your biscuits are like a roll, is that right? But even bread, they put sugar in it to feed the yeast. Combination of all those. How many cereals? I'm glad you're sitting down because the next piece of information I'm about to give you is shocking. Wholemeal. Wholemeal wheat, 72. How could that be? How could the wholemeal get the blood sugar level up higher than white or even sugar? It's because of the amylopectin A, and because it's not refined, it's got more amylopectin A in it. Can you see that? What's whole grain? So brown bread, brown cereal, brown, that's your whole meal, is that right? And how many people say, oh, I eat the wholemeal bread? Would you know the wholemeal bread has more B vitamins? Your wholemeal bread will sweep your colon. But regarding blood sugars, that wholemeal gets it up high. When I presented this at a health retreat in Australia, a lady began to cry. I said, why are you crying? She said, I'm a diabetic. I'm 68. She said, at 65, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I do everything they tell me. I have wholemeal bread, wholemeal cereal, wholemeal pasta, wholemeal cakes. And she said, in every 6 months, the doctor puts me on more insulin. And what's the definition of insanity, by the way? To do everything you've always done and expect different results. She said, the lady down the road, she eats cakes and cookies and biscuits and lollies. I don't do that. And every 6 months I'm put on more insulin. She said, I'm crying tears of joy because you've just solved the puzzle. I'm crying tears of frustration because for 2 years I've been locked in this vicious cycle, not getting anywhere, not knowing what to do, getting worse. How many are like that? The great deceiver is at it again. He's deceived the whole world with the wheat. In Temperance, you know the little book Temperance? The first page on the second chapter says that the devil would tamper with the wheat. Temperance. a little book, Temperance by Ellen White. First page, second chapter. That's something else again. This is hybridized. Now, if you want to search this out, go to get a book. And I think every home should have this book. It really opens your eyes. It's called Wheat Belly by Dr. William Davis. Now, Wheat Belly by Dr. William Davis, this doctor, he's done his research. He's got decades of clinical practice up his sleeve. And this hybridized wheat gets the blood sugar level up so high, so fast, that the liver has to quickly dump it, and guess where it dumps it? In fact, every page of the book, Wheat Belly, he explains wheat belly. Do you wonder where the slender waists are? Just go and look at a 1950 or 1940 photographs of slender bodies. What kind of grains can we eat? God made a lot. Nope, organic is not safe. It's still the hybridized wheat. But there is a wheat that you can still get today that has not been hybridized. I'll give you the name of it. In fact, the original name of the wheat that God made is Enkorn. You can even buy a book called Enkorn. In the first chapter of that book, the lady talks about her little girl who was so sick, bloated, rashes. She took the little one off the hybridized wheat and she was able to find the Enkorn. Everything cleared up. You know, it can take 2 months once it's stopped before you see the good result. Do you know, in Germany, a friend of mine told me this, he grew up in Germany, that near his little town, there was a bakery called Enkorn, and they still grow Enkorn wheat, and they use it in their bakery. And I've had people say to me, I grew up in Germany, I used to eat all the beautiful pastries and the breads there. I come to Australia, I just get bloated. I go back to Germany and I eat the pastries and I don't get bloated. Spelt is another one. Spelt is a wild hybrid of the Enkorn and Kamut. Now, what I'd like to show you is what it's done to the gluten structure, because that's another aspect. So the gluten or the protein structure of Enkorn was very fragile. And fragile is important. That means that the grinding helps to break it up, the cooking, especially if it's made into a cultured bread or the sourdough, it breaks it down. And then our teeth chew it up, and then the enzymes in our gut break it totally down, easy to digest. Now, it's not sure when. I think a couple of thousand years ago, Enkorn did a wild hybrid with a field grass, and that came up with the Emma strain of wheat. And the Emma strain of wheat is not as fragile, but it's fairly fragile. Now the Kamut and the Spelt come from the Emma, and that's fairly fragile. But if you make this Spelt into a sourdough bread, the culturing process brings back that protein or gluten structure to the original fragile structure. Now, it is the Emma that went through the intensive crossbreeding and produced the hybridized wheat. And the hybridization of that wheat created an incredibly complex gluten or protein structure. And it's almost only a cast iron gut that can break that down. But if that hybridized wheat is made into a sourdough bread, it can bring the structure down to a little bit more fragile, but it's still not as fragile as this. Sourdough bread is a cultured bread. Now, let's go to the Bible. Let's go to the Israelites in the desert. And once a year, they celebrated the Passover. Is that right? And what did they have to put out of their houses? Leaven. What's the leaven? It could be none other than the little sourdough culture. That's the only bread that was made. Do you know it's only 100 years ago they took the yeast out of the sourdough to make the yeast that we know today? It's a new thing. Now, some people get confused because Ellen White says bread should not be sour and heavy but light and sweet. Absolutely. She's not talking about sourdough bread. She's talking about bread that's heavy and sour. It's been over-cultured or let sit too long and it hasn't been cooked properly. Can you see why people get that all mixed up? Because all through Europe, all through Russia, the sourdough cultured bread has been made for thousands of years. And it's when it's well made, it's a beautiful bread. It's light and it's sweet. And it's easy to digest because the culturing process breaks down the gluten in the grain. Can you see that? Can you see why the misconception happens? I have a culture. It's 112 years old. A friend of mine got it off an old German woman in a park. And it was 102 when I got it. Oh, actually, probably 122 years old now. I don't make it anymore because I travel a lot, but one of the girls on our property, she still makes it. You see, you just take a little bit, put it in the bread. And you know what it says in Matthew, I think 13:33, you know that a little leaven leaveneth your whole lump? What's it talking about? The sourdough. You put a little bit of leaven in and it leavens the whole lump. The bread rises beautifully, but it doesn't rise in half an hour. It rises in several hours. What about the sourdough you buy in the store? You have to have a look. Because sometimes it'll be yeast and sourdough and they'll just put an essence of sourdough in. But go to a bakery that sells sourdough and investigate. And if I did one day and the girl said, oh, the baker's got this little bowl of dough and he keeps adding bits of water. I said, that's enough. I'll have a loaf of your bread, thank you. He's got the true sourdough. The only way you really can eat yeast bread is if you eat it the next day, because otherwise you're eating the live yeast. You see, in the sourdough culture, there's a combination of wild yeasts and lactobacillus. And the wild yeast causes the bread to rise. The lactobacillus consumes the waste from the wild yeast. So when you eat sourdough bread, you're eating pre-digested grain. That's why many people that can't have yeast bread, they can eat the sourdough bread. Yes, quinoa and millet are grains that are excellent grains. You just want to make sure that they're well cooked. The three most difficult grains to digest are oats, wheat, and barley. And isn't that the three grains most people eat? Yeah. So, millet and quinoa and buckwheat, that's not a wheat, it's actually a seed, and amaranth and rice. These are all grains that actually don't have any gluten in them, but they must be well cooked. The two most common symptoms of someone having a gluten intolerance is brain fog and bloating. And how many people have both of that and think this is life? Do you know it's a challenge? Don't do it now. In fact, don't even do it next week. Don't do it until your cupboards are well stocked. But I challenge you, stop those grains for 2 months and see what happens. See what happens. It's worth it, yeah? Hybrid sprouted wheat, basically it's the same. Yeah, it's still the hybridized wheat. It's certainly because it's sprouted, it's a little bit easier to digest. That is true. Can you see how the great deceiver has gone into so many areas? Yes? Sorry, was that? Caution, I'm not familiar with that. But I don't know everything, so sorry to disappoint you. You make bread with spelt, because spelt still does have a little bit of gluten, so you can get quite a nice bread out of that. You do. You need some gluten, because that's what the sourdough lives on, is the gluten and rye. So these here are the gluten-free, and these have a little bit of gluten, but it's not the hybridized, it's not the complex. We're looking at what causes diabetes. I did a little bit of a sideline there to give you the full explanation of the wheat. I had one man email me and he said, Barbara, you're wrong. Jesus said he's the bread of life. And I wrote back and said, yeah, you're absolutely right. Jesus is the bread of life. But the bread he's referring to is not the bread we have today. So you said it to eat bread. Do you know, the good news is you can eat sourdough bread fresh out of the oven, which you cannot do with the yeast bread. And the sourdough bread, that'll last many days. But if you want to keep it fresh, you freeze it. Whereas the yeast bread, it must actually be cooled and wait till the next day, because the yeast is still active. Caffeine. Do you know caffeine gets an insulin response? So it's important to stop the caffeine to conquer diabetes. Another cause of diabetes can be drugs. I have met people who got diabetes from vaccinations. I've met people who got diabetes from a course of strong antibiotics. So it can be the side effect of all that. I want to show you what's happening at the cellular level with diabetes. When you think about it, we are just a bunch of cells. We are eye cells, tissue cells, and every cell in the body has an energy cycle in it. And I just want to go through the carbohydrate list on what most people are eating today. So most people have cereal for breakfast or bread, and then they have maybe cakes, and you've got donuts, biscuits. So biscuits might be the American biscuit or the cookies. I mean the cookie, anyway, you get it. And pasta and pizza. Do you know, my son-in-law went to Italy, and in the little villages they don't eat pizza and pasta every day. They said they're just really done for special occasions. You know what they mostly eat? They mostly eat thick minestrone soup and Greek salads, lots of those. And the pizza in Italy is very different to the pizza in America. It's really thin pastry, and most of it has no cheese. It's just lots of olives and olive oil and tomato and onion, and some of them have those meats on it. Rice is another carbohydrate. My husband's an Irishman, so potato is a very common food in our main meal. And then last, and certainly not least, or certainly is least in nutritive value, is the pure crystallized acid that's been extracted from the sugarcane plant. In Australia, this would be people's main foods. I know in America and England, no matter where I go, it's the same. Canada the same. And all of these foods break down in the gastrointestinal tract to glucose. And glucose gets sent straight to the liver, and then the liver sends it to the cell. Isn't that why we eat? When it goes into the cell, it goes into a 20-step pathway, and that 20-step pathway gives us 2 units of energy. That's why we eat, isn't it? So our eyes can see, our brain can think, our muscles work. Now, the end result of that 20-step pathway is a chemical form of glucose called pyruvate. Now, pyruvate is the chemical form of glucose that gets fed into the 8-step pathway. Now, this 8-step pathway delivers a whopping 36 units of energy. Now, how come a 20-step pathway, 20 little chemical reactions, only gives us 2 units of energy? And how come an 8-step pathway gives us a whopping 36? It's oxygen. So this is the aerobic pathway. And this pathway up here is the anaerobic pathway, meaning no oxygen. In fact, this pathway produces energy by the process of fermentation. What a difference oxygen makes. How are you going to feel if every single one of your cells can get down to there? Every morning, I'm out early. I'm running up and down hills because I need that oxygen so that my brain has the oxygen to be able to remember everything that God wants to tell me to tell you. Can you see that? That's why the human body should be carefully preserved and developed. Now, you know all I'm doing with that? I'm just doing the preservation. Preservation. So that's the first place that the glucose will be sent, is to the cell. And that's no surprise, is it? But on this high carbohydrate diet, we've still got a lot of glucose left over. And so now the liver, you see, the liver's your project manager, and the liver's orchestrating all of this. The liver causes some to be stored in the cell, particularly the muscle cell, like a little bunch of grapes. But they're little molecules of glucose, and they are called glycogen. Glycogen is a name given to quick-release glucose stores. And it's the diabetic's best-kept secret. Why? If your blood sugar start to drop a little bit, all you need to do is have a big glass of water, and with that water have a little pinch of Celtic salt on your tongue first, and then put your joggers on and run up the hill. And your body will start plucking the glycogen stores and feed it down the pathway. What did I call it? The diabetic's best kept secret. The worst time to eat is before you exercise. Because all your energies wants to go to digestion, and when you're running up a hill, the muscles are saying, hey, give some to us, we're going to get up the hill. And a war happens. I'm sure all those kids that are swimming in the sea after lunch were told not to jump in the sea straight after they ate. Is that right? That's because a whole lot of energy is going to here. And if you dive in the sea, then the skin hits the cold water, all the skin's calling for a bit of blood and has to be taken away from the stomach. At our health retreat, our guests eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, and they don't eat again till breakfast the next day. Where do they get the energy to do their morning walk? It's your glycogen stores. Quick-release glucose stores already sitting in your muscle cell. Let's go back to the high-carbohydrate diet. Only so much glycogen can be stored in the muscle. We've still got glucose left over, and so now the liver causes it to be stored in the most amazing fuel depot in the human body. What's it called? Fat. Now, what I've given you here is just the basic science. And from my illustration, can you see that fat doesn't make you fat? What makes you fat? It's the carbs. Now, there are good fats and there are bad fats. And this is one of the worst fats because it gets dumped on the inactive parts of your body that's harder to run. And then it starts getting dumped on your internal organs, which weighs them down. So I've just given you the basic science. You hear so many voices, don't you? So many voices. And that's why I like to give you science and Bible and history. Tomorrow, I'm going to talk about heart health. And if you've got a heart, you need to be here. And I will show you some of the deceptions that the devil has given so many people on heart health. Yes? Okay. Yeah, 20 steps, 20 step pathway produces 2 units of energy, only 2 because there's no oxygen. And it has to use, it has to produce, I mean, it can only produce 2 minutes of energy because it's got no oxygen. It has to produce that energy by the process of fermentation. For the technical amongst us, that's the glycolytic pathway. And then out of the glycolytic pathway comes pyruvate. That's the chemical form of glucose. And it gets fed into the mitochondria, specifically the Krebs cycle, which is an 8-step pathway. And because of the presence of oxygen, it gives us 36 units of energy. That's right. You cannot get to aerobic unless you go through anaerobic. Because this anaerobic pathway produces the pyruvate that gets fed into the 8-step. I'm going to go over that again tomorrow when I talk about the heart, because our heart muscle is made up of, well, the muscle, and it's made up of those little cells. So I'll go over this again tomorrow, and it'll solidify it in your mind. But it's essential. Knowledge is easy to the him that understands. When you understand that, it explains so much. Yes? Sorry, I can't hear. That's right, type 1, type 2. Do you know what they say about type 1? The cells in the pancreas aren't making any insulin, am I right? Well, let me give you the story of Dan. Dan came to our health retreat. He was 19 years of old age. He had was on 90 units of insulin a day, short and long acting. And he got diabetes at the age of 15 after a very heavy course of antibiotics from a chest infection. His doctor had told him that his pancreas was dead. I said, is it gangrene? What's dead? In fact, what does the Bible say the life of the flesh is? Blood. See, if there's blood going through there, it is alive. So, what Dan did, he had a very low carbohydrate diet. We didn't give him any of this. And by the way, how many of these are made from wheat? Wheat, 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 wheat. He had a very low carbohydrate diet. What did he eat? Lots of vegetables. He wouldn't even eat fruit. He wanted to conquer this thing. We gave him legumes every meal. And there's so many different legumes and there's so many different vegetables. You can have such a variety. And nuts and seeds. Every morning he got up and was running up hills. He was with us for 4 weeks. Did 2 weeks program, 2 weeks in the garden helping out. He told me later that the first week, if he got a blood sugar level low in the middle of the night, he'd have a lolly, or do you call it a candy? And that would get the blood sugar level up so high, so fast, he'd get a headache. Because it goes boom. Second week, I'll finish the story. Second week, he was convicted he shouldn't be having this. He was very quiet. I didn't know this was happening. You see, I teach. I'm just a teacher. That's all I am. I'm just a teacher. You're the doctor. You live in the body. Second week, he decided to eat an apple in the middle of the night. It takes a long time to eat an apple, especially when you want to be asleep. And that wouldn't give the headache, but it would give him that blood sugar rise enough. Third week, if he had a blood sugar level low in the middle of the night, he'd get up and do 30 push-ups. Would that get his blood sugar level up? Why? Glycogen. It's already in the muscle cell. Isn't God good? As soon as you start moving it, it just starts plucking it, putting down the pathway. Pluck, put down the pathway. And if it runs out of that, it'll just go over here. Wow. Why was he getting a blood sugar level low in the middle of the night? He was on too much insulin. By the third week, he dropped his insulin from 90 units a day to 10 units a day. What had started to work, students? Sorry, getting too excited. His pancreas. What was he told? It was dead. Don't you love proving to your doctor that you can do it? Those doctors out there, they need you to show them what your body can do. That's what they need. Let me give you the story of Bobby. Now, Bobby was the CEO of many big companies. He's 62. It was at a health retreat I did in down south a couple of years ago. He came in a wheelchair. He said, I'm here because a friend of mine said you can help. I've spent $1 million on my health in the last 10 years. Recently, my doctor took the lymph nodes out of my groin to see if he could find out why I have diabetes. I can't get my mind around that one. That doesn't make much sense to me at all. So when he flew to us from Florida, his legs swelled. That's why he was in the wheelchair. He had really expensive bandages to put on his legs. I said, you won't need them. I got him on the rebounder every day. You know the rebounder? If you've got a rebounder in your house, where are the kids? On the rebounder, they know. I've come to the conclusion we get old because we stop jumping. And you know what the rebounder is? No jarring. No jarring. Springs up. And the NASA, it's the most powerful exercise. It's the only exercise that prepares their astronauts for outer space and prevents the 25% bone loss they have after 2 weeks in outer space. And you can have it in your lounge room. When you get better at this, you can start leaping. So I got him leaping. Well, when he could. Because what was swelling was his lymphatic system. And the rebounder is the most powerful at stimulating the lymphatic system, moving that fluid through the body. You had a question? You're interested in the story of dropping down the insulin from 90 units to 10. So listen to this story because it's another story that illustrates. Both of these men were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. One at the age of 15 and this guy, he was diagnosed at the age of 20. So let me finish the story. So Bobby, we got him rebounding to get that fluid moving. I got him walking barefoot in the grass every morning. Do you know that's a good one? Massages the bottom of the feet. Probably wouldn't do it on the streets of New York, but I've been going barefoot every morning and I haven't got any bindies yet. Do you have bindies? Little prickles that get in your feet? Got beautiful grass here. And the bees aren't quite out that early, so you won't get a bee sting either. So we got him walking barefoot on the grass. He was on a lot of medication for blood pressure, for blood cholesterol, for blood sugar, for blood thinning. So he was on all medication for that. So it's a powerful story also to illustrate what I'm going to show you tomorrow. What did he eat? He was very strict. He said, anything you tell me, I will do. And every time we sat together at the mealtime, he'd say, am I eating right? Am I eating right? And this guy's a CEO of some big companies. He said, if it doesn't work in business, we don't keep doing it. He said, why don't they apply that to health? So he had spent $1 million in 10 years. He's a wealthy guy. And someone said a little health retreat in the hills down south could help him. That's all we did. He was with us for 2 weeks. By the end of the second week, his 90 units of insulin, he was down to 10 units. Incredible. No magic herb. I shouldn't use the word magic, just incredible, isn't it? It seems unbelievable. It's the body. The body's been designed to heal itself. I was shocked that he was able to reduce his insulin that quickly. I get an email 3 months later. Got that? 3 months later. He says, I'm on no medication. He said, I've lost, what was that, 4 months, 45 pounds. What would that be, 20 kilos? Lost 45 pounds in 3 months. He said, I am cycling 6 miles a day. He said, I'm swimming 30 laps a day. Got that? Can you see why this guy got results? This is serious stuff. So you've got to take some serious changes. He was rebounding 3 minutes, three times a day. That's not much. He said, I'm eating 2 meals a day. What do they usually tell diabetics to do? Eat all day long. So what you have to do to be able to do this, number two, you really have to have a food program that is high in fiber. So that's all your vegetables. Remember this, vegetables are high in fiber, low in sugars, and high in minerals. Remember yesterday we looked at minerals gluing us all together? Fruit is high in fiber, high in sugars, low in minerals. Not that fruit's bad. It's just that for certain conditions you need to greatly reduce that. The fruit that he was having was the low GI. So number three, low GI foods. And it's not hard to get a glycemic index chart. So instead of white potato, sweet potato. Instead of bananas, you have cherries. It's as simple as that. But I like bananas. Well, how much do you like your diabetes? I mean, it's not forever. See, once you conquer it, you can start to have maybe a few. It's not forever. Until you conquer it, you can't touch wheat. Once you conquer it, you might be able to have a little wheat here and there. High fiber, generous protein. What's your generous proteins? Daily legumes. I met a scientist at one of the retreats. He's 69. He said, when I was in my 40s, I was told I had pre-diabetes to eat legumes every day. He said, so I did, and I never got diabetes. Remember what the legumes do? They give that lovely, slow, steady delivery of fuel. Beans. Get a crock pot. Soak them overnight. Put them in the crock pot. Soak them all day. Rinse them at night. Bring them to the boil. Rinse them again. Then put them in your crock pot. And then in the morning, you've got a hot pot of beans. Easy. Make it easy. Oh, you've got to put stuff in those beans or the family won't eat them. Am I right? You should see what I put in my beans. They are outstanding. And in the back of my book, there are recipes for one thing and one thing only. Beans. Yes? If you throw out the water, are you throwing out the vitamins? In your vegetables you are, but not in your legumes. You see, what you know what you're throwing out? The lectins, the phytic acids, the wind producers. Did everyone hear that? When I was in Tennessee, they cook legumes, they soak them, and then just bring them to the boil. And after a couple of hours, they start putting onions in. And I'm thinking, oh, no. And there's all this scum around the edge. One lady said, oh, my husband loves the pot liquor. You heard of pot liquor? In Tennessee, the pot liquor is all that liquid that they... And, oh, dear, did those men have terrible wind problems. So I said, please let me show you. So I did the beans, and I love cooking. I don't mind at all. So I soaked them overnight. I rinsed them. I brought them to the boil. Then I rinsed them again. You know when you bring them to the boil and there's all that fluff? What do you think that fluff is? There's your wind. So I rinsed them again. Do you know if they're heavy beans that take a few hours, I'll rinse them halfway through. And then I'll have a sauce. Maybe it's a beautiful, rich tomato sauce. So when they're half cooked, rinse them again, put them in there and let them finish their cooking and there's your pot liquor. There's all sorts of different ways. If you want to know how to do legumes, buy a Lebanese or an Italian or an Indian cookbook. They know how to do their beans. So generous protein. your nuts and your seeds. And healthy fats. What are your healthy fats? They're the ones that God made. Nuts and seeds, coconut oil, olive oil. What does the Bible talk about? Do a Bible study, get your concordance on olive oil. And you'll see very clearly what is God saying about olive oil. It's good stuff. Did you know that fat is an essential nutrient? Did you know that your brain is the fattiest organ in the body? Do you know your brain can't function without fat? We're going to talk about that a bit tomorrow when we talk about the heart. Because you actually can't talk about the heart for long without talking a little bit about the brain. So we'll cover that tomorrow. This is how to conquer diabetes, and this is how to prevent diabetes. Wheat will not cause diabetes if you're having a slice here and there. But if you have diabetes, it must stop till you conquer it. Can you see that? What will also help to conquer diabetes is exercise. Now, in both the cases that I just related to you, do you notice in both those cases, they were both exercising. Have you seen what the athletes go through in preparation for the Olympic Games? We're training for something more important than the Olympic Games. What's that? That's the service of God. We need to all be athletes. Athletes. The only way to do it, especially in this climate, is to go to bed early. And then you can get up early. And then you can do it. Yes? The information in my book, this is touched on, but it's in greater detail in my set of DVDs. I'll cover exercise in a little bit more detail tomorrow. I'll define it a little bit more, yes? Okay, good question. So the question is, the two cases I just showed where the insulin dropped right down, was it because their pancreas started working or was it because they had eliminated all this? Well, there's one answer to that, and it's a three-letter word. Yes. In other words, it's a bit of it all. Their pancreas began to work because they'd stopped this. Can you see that? And what they did is they took their blood sugar every day and they adjusted their insulin accordingly. If someone's on 90 units of insulin a day, they can't stop that. That'd be dangerous. What they got to do is they got to implement this, give the body the right conditions, revive that pancreas, and then start easing off. Can you see that? How much water a day? 8 glasses at least. Some will say 8 plus. In this weather, probably a little bit more. And the best way to have water is little by little by little by little all through the day. Doesn't matter if it's hot or cold water. Your body actually likes body temperature water best. Because if you have really cold water, your stomach has to warm it up before it can send it anywhere else in the body. It's not going to send cold water into the tissues. That almost seems too simple, is that right? Huh? But God meant it to be simple, is that right? He meant it to be very simple, and I just praise God every day it is that simple. It is true that nettle tea can help. It is true that chromium can help. But you know what I love doing? I love making it incredibly simple. Because I know that there's only one thing that has the ability to heal us, and that's the human body. And it'll heal us if you give it the right conditions. And knowledge dissipates fear. And God has said in 1 2 Timothy 1 verse 7, I have not given you the spirit of fear. Well, if God didn't give us the spirit of fear, who did? God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And that's why I take you into the cell. I will take you into the cell again tomorrow. I know it's a little bit complicated. It's all right. I had to read it 10 times before I got it. But understanding that helps you to understand why all this works. And knowledge is easy to him that understands. Are there any questions before we close? Yes? Okay. Talked about exercise every morning and feeling a little sick with exercise. I would have to investigate that. So what would you investigate? You investigate how much water you've had before you go. You would investigate how quickly you drank it. You would have to investigate what you had for your last meal. Can you see a bit of investigation happens? One lady said, I can't drink water because it makes me feel so sick. And so I began to investigate, and I found out she's drinking a liter of water all at once. Well, I have to tell you, I'd feel sick too. This is the way you drink your water. You wake up in the morning, you drink half a glass. Then you go to the bathroom and you drink another half glass. Well, at the moment, we actually have to get dressed first, don't we? So wake up in the morning, have half a glass. Get dressed, have another half glass. Go to the bathroom, have another half glass. Pray, have another half glass. Read your Bible, have another half glass. Can you see how you do it? And you can get a lot of water in by doing it like that, little by little by little. It's like a plant. If the plant is dry and you pour, say, you'd say 16 ounces in there and it's bone dry, it'll all run out the bottom. But if you just put it in little by little by little, you can get 16 ounces in there without it all falling out the bottom. You see that? The body's the same. Yes? What do mushrooms are a mold? They're a fungus. They're a form of fungus. And if you don't have yeast and if you don't have cancer, a little mushroom now and then's not a big deal. And if you've got nice, strong hydrochloric acid, not a big deal. Yeah? Is it true that we shouldn't have a lot of liquid with our meals? It is true. Because our hydrochloric acid is designed to break down our food, particularly our protein. In fact, what I'm going to do on tomorrow's Wednesday, is that right? We'll do heart health. On Thursday, I'm going to draw the gastrointestinal tract and I'm going to take you on a journey through your whole gastrointestinal tract and show you how it works. And it's a real eye-opener. And you will see that when you drink with your meals, now obviously a mouthful's not going to make a difference, but when you're drinking large amounts with your meal, it does water down your hydrochloric acid, so you're unable to break your protein. This, yes? So for carbohydrates with your, so really it should be low carbohydrate. Even the good ones. You can overdo the good ones. Doesn't mean no carbohydrates. Mind you, like Bobby, if you want to conquer it quickly, he just cut it all out. And there's no problem with that. Because you've still got some carbohydrates in your legumes. Just don't make it a large part. So we'll make this our last question because a bell has rung. Yeah? Is it good to juice your vegetables? Now, day one and day two at Misty Mountain Health Retreat, our guests have juices every 2 hours. So juice should be in place of food. Now, if you want a good mineral boost, a juice is great. So you might have that instead of an evening meal if you want to have a juice a day. Or you might have it, like some people, they'll have them two main meals at 10 and 3. And they may be going to work in the garden and they might have a juice about 8 and that'll keep them going a bit more and have their meal at 10. So As a rule, you either eat or you juice. But I do understand some people supplement with juice. It's probably one of the best mineral and vitamin supplements you can have is a fresh juice. But it shouldn't take the place of water. Thank you for your attention. Shall we close with a prayer? Father in heaven, we thank you so much again for this amazing body that you've given us. Thank you for the knowledge on how it works. And I pray, Father, that each one of us here will be inspired and convicted to carefully preserve and develop this physical organism, that through humanity you will be able to, in a more powerful way, reveal your divine nature to everyone we come in contact, is our prayer in the name of Jesus. Amen.